Hello, Asymptote listeners. This is Layla Benitez-James here again, and for this last episode of our 2016 Gregorian calendar year, I wanted to step out into territory that is perhaps a little strange. I am stepping out into the occult, the word from the Latin meaning hidden or secret, as I want to travel into the world of the tarot. Now, I don't want to tread on too many well-worn cliches here, but please forgive me if I do. The tarot and things of the occult have always lived in the margins of my mind, as my only access to them has been through literature, through the likes of Bram Stoker's Dracula or Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, or in the more contemporary poem, The Problem of Describing Color by Robert Haas, where the speaker loves a woman who tells fortunes with a deck of fallen leaves until they come out right. Because how could you not love a woman who cheats at the tarot? Even though I have family from Louisiana, the tarot was never part of our experience there, and yet lately it has begun to weave itself into my life. In this episode, we won't be telling any fortunes or revealing anything divine. This week, the full moon is in Gemini, and even though I'm not quite sure what that means for us, I do know that this is the Asymptote Podcast, so stay tuned. So perhaps this whole tarot business started for me in Jamaica, or rather, with a book set largely in Jamaica that I have not even yet finished, A History of Seven Killings, the dark and violent work of Jamaican novelist Marlon James, which swirls around the world of reggae. It was in June that I had read so much about it, and had to read it, that its reggae world was on my mind. Alicante, where I was living, was hosting a festival called Eat My Soul, and the magical Lee Scratch Perry was playing a show, so I had to go. On my way to the venue, a huge former cigarette factory appropriately named Las Cigarreras, I passed their art space, which had a large sign advertising Black Power Tarot. I had no idea what it was, as those two things, tarot and black power, had never before been combined in my memory. The show ended up being a series of large screen-printed versions of the major arcana of the tarot, the 22 cards which hold special divinatory meanings within the 78-card deck. But instead of the traditional pictures, a caricature of Sun Ra was painted for the Sun card. Tupac Shakur hung upside down, Thug Life tattooed across his abs as the Hanged Man, and Tina Turner pried open the jaws of a lion. I was struck by these figures of Black Americana making their way into a deck in a world that I knew little about. Reading more about the artist pointed me back to a Chilean filmmaker I did know a bit about, Alejandro Jodorowsky. Back in May, Asymptote featured an excerpt of Jodorowsky's Albina and the Dog, translated from the Spanish by Alfred McAdam for our Translation Tuesday series. Now, what I didn't know about Jodorowsky was that he is deeply devoted to the tarot, and that his readings had inspired a Canadian punk musician to make his very own deck. This Indian-Canadian musician, who goes by the name King Khan, had his own obsessions with Sun Ra and many other figures in black music. Together with artist Michael Eaton, they crafted their own versions of the major arcana with characters such as Sister Rosetta Tharpe replacing the more anonymous pale figures. Now, without going too deep into the history of tarot, I found that this melding with black power was actually not too radical an idea given its role in early America, as much of the occult community was more closely aligned with what I now think of as liberal values, and I was surprised to learn that their newspapers and practitioners were often abolitionist and suffragist. While it had never really occurred to me that there were more modern tarot decks, a quick search yielded hundreds of themed versions. A poet and friend in Madrid was unsurprised and reminded me that his friend, a Colombian Spanish artist and graphic designer, had created his own deck years ago, inspired by 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. Artist Andres Marquinez Casas created his Macondo Tarot deck back in 1997 as part of a thesis project on Marquez after he discovered what he described as a strange resemblance between some of the characters and those striking illustrations of the traditional tarot. He read the novel over and over, 5 times in a row, to suss out which characters would best suit the images and ideas of the traditional tarot, and even collaborated with Colombian graphic designer John Vargas Beltran to create a special Macondo font to be used for the text on the cards, which include actual quotes from the novel to further illuminate the path of whoever is seeking to unfold their fortune in the context of Macondo. His work is wild and bears the influence of Picasso in its fragmented take on the book, and the project was shown at the University of Columbia, as well as in Havana, Cuba, London in the UK, and in Madrid. Rather than an illustration of the novel, Casas saw the work as a reinvention of the tarot itself, inspired by the world of magical realism. Because the world of the tarot was so reliant on signs and symbols, he was able to take great creative leaps in crafting a Macondo system through similar literary symbolism, filling in the gaps of description, which is always a reader's task with a work of fiction. It was medieval Europe translated into Latin America. So I noticed a great difference between the theme decks and these other, more complex projects. As cool as the idea of a Lord of the Rings tarot seemed to me for a moment, they were really just reproducing the images, akin to printing pictures onto a mug or a t-shirt along the run of the tarot line, whereas the Black Power Tarot and the Macondo Tarot were really translating one world into an already existing system, taking into account all the different connotations of certain characters and personalities, and attempting to find their match or translation within the tarot hierarchy. After seeing the Black Power Tarot show, I began to notice and pick up the playing cards that I came across on the street. The Spanish card deck is more similar to the tarot deck, in that instead of hearts, spades, diamonds, and clover-like clubs, it is swords, cups, wands, and coins as suits, so that with each card I collected, I was able to tell myself a slow kind of fortune. But after carrying around the 10 of cups for half a year and the 10 of coins found on the ground, I was finally pushed to try and find a tarot shop in Alicante and a real deck of my own. Though the internet said that there was a shop not too far from the house, on a Martin Luther King Jr. Street, of all places, the shop looked long closed. I decided to return to the King Con deck online, and there I stumbled across a brand new deck, due out this spring, whose artwork was astonishing. Dark portraits of contemporary Black artists in celestial settings. A little boy with what I thought was a lamb slung around his neck, echoing, for me, paintings I had seen by the Spanish Baroque painter Zurbarán in the Prado. This new translation of the tarot was, and still is, being created by American artist Courtney Alexander, who was kind enough to answer some questions I had about her creative process and the impetus to transform the system once again. When I recently read Against Narrowness, Indie Publishing's Diversity Offers Response to Tyranny, by Ilan Stavins, I was heartened to be reminded of the widening wedge that literature and creative endeavors drive into the collective consciousness. There, Márquez and his 100 Years of Solitude appeared again, but this time as one of the many examples of revolutionary writers who wrote against oppression, work that would eventually earn him a Nobel Prize. And here I have to quote Stavins directly, as I could not say it better myself. Simply put, he says, our mission is to combat narrowness, not through ideological banter, but by promulgating insight inaccessible by other means. I could not help but think of these new interpretations as doing that same work, of widening what begins as traditional and opening it up to new audiences. Here is my conversation with Alexander, where we discuss some specific cards and the importance of creating new environments for the tarot to exist in. Courtney Alexander, thank you so much for taking the time out of painting to talk with us today. Can you begin by describing your project?
My project is Dusta Onyx, a melanated tarot deck, and I've wanted to create a tarot deck, when I say for a while, not like a long time, but like earlier this year was really when the desire hit me, because I was out looking for a tarot deck and definitely was looking for some that had images of people of color, and you know, there are those that do exist, but none were really resonating with me. And so I just had a desire to create my own that really was not just about featuring people of color and of African descent, but that also broke some of the boundaries of gender roles and other expectations. So I kind of sat with that idea for a while, and life happened, and I ended up coming out with the cards over the summer.
And so just now you were working on the Queen of Cups, you said.
Mm-hmm.
And who is going into the Queen of Cups?
So the Queen of Cups is the face of Missy Elliott with the eyes of Nikki Giovanni. Especially working on the court cards and me using this hybrid of different black figures, it has really brought a certain complexity to the court cards that I feel is missing sometimes even in traditional interpretation. Because when I think of the relationship between the different court cards, a lot of times I see them as siblings or part of a unit or family, or sometimes even just a breakdown in our different inner archetypes. In traditional tarot interpretation, sometimes the personalities are seen as so separate that you don't always get the energy that how they influence each other across the suits. And so it's been very interesting seeing how the living people that I'm using is influence has brought such a complexity. Because even astrologically, when you look at a natal chart, people know their sun sign as one thing, but we are actually, we're kind of a bit of everything. You know, none of us are completely water, air, you know, or fire or earth. We have a mix, just, you know, based on our layout. And so I think that by going this route is definitely bringing just such a new energy. So with the Queen of Cups, instead of her being the usual kind of the weaker of the sisters, the really sensitive and soft, using someone as powerful as Missy Elliott, who I can imagine is this very sensitive and intuitive person, but is also the source of her creativity and individuality, and someone like Nikki Giovanni, who is more softer and nurturing and, you know, is poetic and intelligent and intellectual, it gives strength back to the Queen of Cups. Makes her so much more than just this, you know, oh, she's the nice sister or the sweet sister, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting. Because one of the things that struck me about the collection was that it's not just taking these different characters and putting it into the tarot, but it's mixing them up. I read that the Queen of Wands is Solange with Nicki Minaj's eyes, and that I think it was the Prince of Cups, perhaps, that is Prince with Duke Ellington's eyes.
Oh, yeah, the King of Cups.
The King of Cups, sorry, yeah. And I wondered if it was specifically, I mean, I've seen some of the images, but is there something that was particularly important about, like, translating, if you will, the eyes that way? For, you know, superimposing different artists' eyes on one another.
It wasn't completely intentional in the beginning until it was, like, I have a couple of really close people that I do feel comfortable discussing the cards with in regards to just feedback. And they just... you know, noted to me how important the eyes were. The first court card that I did, I believe, was the Page of Cups. Just the importance of those eyes, you know, who they belong to, really affecting the energy that is translated. So it's funny because actually Solange was going to be my Queen of Cups. Because when I saw her album cover, it just really, the visual of that cover really came off like very soft and just like I was just drawn to the image. But then when I began to work on the card, she came out as the Queen of Wands, because most of the ideas that I see in my deck really comes in retrospect. Most of the time I'm really just working intuitively, and so that was when I really realized like the importance of who I included. And so when you think of the Queen of Wands, I mean, Solange is perfect. I mean, I'll actually look into their astrology charts and everything, and their astrology charts really do match with the energy of the card. And so she does have a lot of fire energy in her chart, although she is this very caring and artistic and sensitive person as well. And so we've definitely seen the fire side of Solange. I mean, even Beyonce sings about it in her songs, how Solange just really pushes her to just be her own person. And with Nicki Minaj and Queen of Wands also being a card that represents a woman who's like comfortable in her sexuality, and her expression of it, then, you know, Nicki Minaj does embody that. The Queen of Wands was more accidental than the rest. The rest, after my experience creating the Queen of Wands, that's when I really was like, okay, I do need to start thinking about it, especially after I had this discussion with a friend and what it meant, not just looking to the visual imagery and who attracted me, but what their energy meant. So with the King of Cups that you mentioned, Prince, I know Prince is a Gemini, but he also has like his ascendant is Pisces. And I think that is what has made him the legend that he is, just like that quality of himself that's really magical. And he's just so in touch with all these parts of himself and wasn't afraid to show it. Like, he wasn't boxed into what a man should be, what a man should look like, what a man should present himself as, but he was also super talented musically. You know, one of his influences was Duke Ellington.
Many of these are such modern people, such modern images, and then you're kind of going back in time as well, and then mixing many images from Africa. So there's kind of a transatlantic, there's like the African diaspora, but also images, you know, current images from Africa as well.
Yeah, and I think that's been the fun part of it, because now the cards are transcending even time, and there's not a particular era, there's not a particular religious tradition or anything, like, it's not boxed in by anything at this point, which I find really beautiful. It's much more of a representation of what the diaspora is. I've been thinking a little more about, you know, the figures that I'm using, and they are Black American, but that's only because I'm Black American and I don't feel comfortable just grabbing people from other people's cultures that I may not have a connection to personally.
Right, you're translating it into your own kind of language.
Exactly, yeah. So, I'm using their influences, but the characters are still themselves, you know. They're still an individual. That has, again, it's been such an intuitive journey, and things happening accidentally. And the more I look at the cards and look back on the work that's been done so far, that makes me fall in love with them even more, because there's all these influences. And I really think that that is such an empowering thing, that ancestral energies that have been blessing me through this process and working with me and allowing me to produce this work is not attached to a specific god or deity or anything. It's kind of like saying that we are divine beings today, yesterday, and in the future. Like, it all matters. And so I just am very honored to be such a vessel for this work. It's actually kind of surreal sometimes to even create it and then go back and be like, oh my gosh, I'm doing this.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, looking at the images, that really struck me. They are very surreal. I mean, you can see there are so many different things being pulled, but there is, I mean, they have their own language. I was thinking about it in terms of translation. You know, if I can't read Chinese or Italian, I need someone to translate it into English because that's what I read. But then thinking about that in terms of cultures, like, I've been interested in the past in the tarot, but I've never felt that it, you know, quote unquote, speaks my language. And then seeing this mix of images, I was like, whoa, that's, you know, that is speaking to me directly with images that are from my own life.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was starting to feel, because, like, I'm Virgo, and I think that more heady part of myself that likes to think and calculate things, I find astrology and tarot attractive for that reason. I appreciate the system itself. Mm-hmm. And that's why I don't mind sticking to the Rider-Waite traditional, like, foundation. That's what I'm working from, but it does feel nice to bring this new interpretation that is more connected with the souls of our people and stuff. And I think, like, my issue before with some other decks featuring people of color is that sometimes it's diversity for diversity's sake. So, hey, we need to see more Asian or Black people or, you know, Indian people or whatever. So I'm just going to make a card that has this person or a piece of their culture. And so it just, or like some of the decks that do exist that may be like, you know, all Black characters, sometimes they feel really studied. Hmm. You know, it feels very artifactual. And that's not the place. I tried coming from that place in the beginning when I was thinking about the project, I did start to like come from this place of overthinking and trying to study and feeling like I got to learn and absorb all these informations and understand each and every symbol that I was creating and putting into the cards. But something happened and I just started creating, and they produced their own imagery. And like you said, their own language. And it's a language, like you said, that now I realize now that a lot of people actually do understand. You know, I didn't have to like think that heavy about it and understand this system and all of this stuff. It's coming from such a different place that I don't even know where. I just believe it's coming from a place beyond myself. And when you're dealing with spirit and when you're dealing with the soul and everything, and you're dealing with the collective in that way, then it makes sense now how so many people can see these cards that have such a deep connection to them, because it's not coming from our mind, just the mind.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels and like a lot of history is being woven through the cards. I'm thinking now of this, of there's a card with a boy with a lamb on his shoulders.
The Fool.
Ah, yep. That's the Fool. Okay, yeah. I mean, that was making me think of very, very old paintings, like 15th and 16th century, like paintings from Spain, where like the lamb has all of these heavy representational connotations, but it felt very appropriate as well. And it seems like there's so much being woven through in these images.
Yeah, I love the Fool card and the Hermit and their relationship. Actually, it was supposed to be a goat, but I can understand how it's read as the lamb because of the light.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that was just, I guess that's my own art history stuff. I'm like, oh, it has to be a lamb.
No, you're not the only person who felt it was that way, but I never wanted to bother changing it because maybe it is supposed to be seen as a lamb. Some may actually see it as a goat. I think the symbolism and the message of it still stands, because I think I was just looking at images that were inspiring me, and I did see this little boy. He was carrying a goat on his shoulder.
Where was he from?
I cannot remember. Mm-hmm. I would have to go back.
Because, well, now I'm thinking about the goats in Ethiopia, that it was like goat herders that originally discovered coffee. Had like this sort of like caffeinated effect, and that was like the symbol of goats is connected to coffee.
Oh, I didn't know that. Like I think I was thinking of the fearlessness of goats, especially those little mountain goats that go on the cliffs, and they like live in this treacherous land, but they just do their own thing. And that's like the energy of the Fool. The Fool is just like, it's time for adventure. just kind of jumps out into the world, and he can be seen as foolish or naive, but the Fool is also brave. Sometimes what energy we need to embody in regards to just, you know, being okay with uncertainty, which is something that was very difficult for me for a long time, is being okay with uncertainty. And the Hermit is, he's the same way. The Hermit is just jumping within. And so, you know, the Hermit goes, if the Fool starts out on this outward journey into the external world, goes and learns all this stuff, and it's like, all right, it's time to deal with me and process all of this stuff. So then he goes on this little adventure within, goes into the mountain, chills, comes out, and, you know, the story continues. I do like their relationship.
Oh, that's great. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the Hermit card then.
Yeah, they both have the same eye on their forehead, kind of course, symbolic of the third eye and seeing. And I think the third eye is definitely representative of a trust beyond what we see in our natural world, that sense of knowing, which both of them have and utilize in a different way.
Well, that's all the time we have now for the literary futures of the tarot. We'll be back in 2017 with new podcast episodes, but until then, if you need to get your world literature fix, or if you'd like to see links to the visuals mentioned in this program, head over to theasymptotejournal.com, where you'll find a dazzling array of stories, poems, and articles from all over the globe, with especially engaging interviews out just now from our ever-evolving blog. Also, keep an eye out for our forthcoming winter 2017 issue, which is already shaping up to be one of the most beautiful, with some really incredible names. Any translators out there should also know that you still have plenty of time to take part in our international translation contest, Close Approximations, as the deadline is the 1st of February. And if you'd like to get even more involved with Asymptote, visit our support page on the website to learn more about how you can join our support team. Many, many thanks to Belgrade Band Vile for the use of some amazing music in this episode, and to our brilliant audio editor, Mirza Poritz. This has been the Asymptote Podcast, and we'll see you again next year.